Hello everyone, I'm your host Annie Watson, and welcome back to another episode of R is Sorare. February is going to be the month where I stick consistently to a schedule, so I promise I'll have an interview out or an episode out every single Thursday for the month of February. I'm taking it month by month. I also just got a brand new microphone because I broke mine, so hopefully the sound quality is good. I'm pretty sure it is, but yeah, this week is a very exciting holds a very exciting episode because I interviewed Chris Peets, who is the CEO, the Chief Executive Officer of Mirum Pharmaceuticals, which is a pharmaceutical company whose goal is to make and help get approved drugs and treatments for rare and debilitating liver conditions. I could have said that way more concisely, but here we are. But yeah, Chris and his team reached out to me after hearing my episode with Anna Laurent, who has ALGS, Alagille syndrome. And that's one of the many conditions that they treat. And their drug, LIVMARLI, just got approved back in September. And LIVMARLI helps target the chronic itch of Alagille syndrome, which is amazing. So yeah, I got to sit down and talk to Chris. This pharmaceutical side is brand new to the R is Sorare repertoire of episodes, if you will. The first time I had heard and interviewed somebody on the pharmaceutical end of the rare disease community. So it's a unique and new perspective because I've had the doctor's perspective, I've had the lawyer's perspective, I've had the spouse's perspective, I've had the patient's perspective, obviously. But this is a new one for me. And it was a very exciting interview. I am honestly in awe of the fact that I'm at this point, and it's only been a little bit over a year since I started this podcast. So this is all thanks to you guys. So thank you guys for listening in every week and spreading the word, because without you guys, I would not be able to have done this episode, and have had this amazing interview. It's honestly all because of you guys. So thank you guys so much. I can't thank you guys enough. There are more people out there listening to this episode than I can literally wrap my head around, which is insane. So yes, thank you guys so much for tuning in every week. And if you want to listen to more episodes from me in the future, make sure you are subscribed to this podcast, R is Sorare, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure you're following me on Instagram at R is Sorare Podcast. That is my main social media platform at the moment. And make sure you turn on post notifications and story notifications, just because Instagram's algorithm is a little bit wonky. So make sure you turn those on. And yeah, without further ado, let's get into the episode.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
Good, Annie. How are you? Thanks for hosting.
I'm good. And of course, anytime. Thank you for having me. This feels, I feel like the role should be reversed because this feels like I'm like kind of geeking out right now because I'm talking to a CEO. Like this feels like the role should be reversed, but I'm very excited for this episode.
Likewise, I, and no reason to, put undue importance. I'm just Chris and excited to be here and chat with you about our programs and some of the stories that we get involved with, because I think your platform and some of the things you talk about here are really cool and impactful.
Thank you. First off, as all of my episodes start off with, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are. Obviously you're a CEO, but what you do, what company you're a CEO for. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and a fun fact about yourself.
Sure. I'll start with the fun fact part, I guess. And, I think first when I introduce myself, I generally start out with a dad, and have, been over the past couple of years in particular, been building a whole lot of things in the backyard, like a treehouse that's maybe wouldn't pass many inspections, and building model airplanes with the kids, things like that, is kind of my side job when I'm not paying attention to Mirum things. And a bit about my background and kind of what I do as CEO of Mirum. Background that comes from the business side of things, from finance to marketing roles and strategy roles across different industries, frankly, is where I started, but gravitated towards the areas where you could develop new medicines and really have a big impact for a lot of people. That led me eventually to Mirum. I can dive into a little bit of some of the stories behind it. You know, what the job is today is helping to make sure Mirum as a company has the right people in it, has the right resources, and is pointed in the right direction to bring forward new medicines for people with rare diseases that just have a life-changing impact. That's what we're here to do. And my job is a lot of pulling in the right people and resources to make sure it happens.
That's amazing. That's amazing. What, like, specifically, if you don't mind me asking, what led you to Mirum? Because there are a lot of pharmaceutical companies out there, and not that I feel like I have no, like, expertise in the realm of rare disease pharmaceuticals, but what led you exactly to Mirum?
Thanks for that question. Actually, it's, you know, maybe a bit of a unique story in terms of how, you know, someone comes to take on a new job. And pinch myself a little bit because I love my job so much and how much we've been able to create from scratch. And Mirum started when myself and a circle of colleagues that are with us today in the company were looking to start something new. So we were starting from scratch and looking at a lot of potential new medicines in larger companies that maybe weren't getting the attention they deserve. And spent a year and a half looking at all sorts of different opportunities. And this is kind of pretty typical for large companies is they end up with just a ton of different cool potential science and they don't really have the bandwidth to take it all forward. So there's an opportunity to create new companies for the things that maybe don't have the right attention. And as we were looking, we came across our programs to late stage clinical products at the time that target bile acids, relevant for a whole bunch of rare liver diseases, and realized that we could form a company around them, take them out and get them out to patients faster than they would have otherwise, or maybe wouldn't have at all. And it was all driven by just some of the data that that program had. It was clear to us when we got to review the program and learn about it that it was without a doubt having just a quite dramatic impact on patients in the clinical studies that had been run with it. Mm-hmm. So that is what led me to Mirum is just the data and that you could see what a dramatic potential this had for patients. And you know, instantly knew, actually I stood up from my desk halfway through working through the report that had the clinical data in it. I jumped up and went and talked to all the other people that were involved in it to say, you know, this is the one we're going to go start a new company based on this.
That's amazing. That's like just pioneering your own way through pharmaceuticals, which is not an easy thing to do at all. That's amazing. That's quite incredible. And obviously the rewards are quite incredible as well. To get started, kind of the thing that brought you to me, which was Alagille syndrome, because I interviewed an Alagille syndrome patient. Can you give us a little bit of a rundown on Alagille syndrome and then also the other rare liver conditions that Mirum Pharmaceuticals kind of covers, if you will?
Absolutely. So Alagille syndrome is a genetically driven disease that is primarily related to vasculature development. That's kind of one of the common elements behind it. It is a multi-system disorder, so it impacts several organs in the body, but typically shows up in the most symptomatic driver and most treated element of the disease is cholestasis of the liver. What that means is the liver has too few bile ducts. It doesn't clear and process bile normally, and then that backs up bile acids that cause damage within the liver and also throughout the body. Patients that have this syndrome typically have hyper-elevated circulating bile acids. And bile acids are normal. They're part of digestion. So your liver and gallbladder then secrete bile acids several times a day when you eat, when you think about food. And then your intestines will reabsorb it, reuse it. It's a normal biological function. But when it's impaired in its flow, it becomes very disrupted and can be at dangerous levels throughout the body. And so a common feature of this disease is that elevated bile acid exposure creates a very severe itching or pruritus. And it's, you just can't overstate how devastating this can be. It causes, you know, patients that scratch until their skin breaks, that's relentless, and, you know, ultimately can be a reason for a liver transplant. So a highly burdensome condition to deal with, this, you know, bile acid disruption. And kind of bridge to the other diseases that we work in, that bile acid disruption from Alagille syndrome, there's a lot of other things that can cause a similar disruption in bile acids. We also have studies in progressive familial intrahepatic cholestasis and biliary atresia. So those first three are all generally pediatric conditions. That's one of our programs that we're working on. And there's three similar adult liver diseases that we work in as well. Commonality across all of them is that bile acid overload causes all sorts of issues. And our products target bile acids. So we help to deplete the excess bile acids.
Okay. Good to know. Good to get a little base foundation as to what you guys focus on, which obviously some of them don't affect as many people, I guess, as others, based on my knowledge from what I learned from Anna Laurent and from also from when you guys reached out to me, is that it's only about, like you said, like 2,000 to 2,500 adults suffer from Alagille syndrome, if I'm correct.
It's 2,000 to 2,500 kids, actually. And that's where a lot of the care and attention is given. It certainly does impact adults as well. But, you know, sadly, by the time that children get to adulthood, a lot of them have already had a liver transplant, or many have even passed away by the time they get to adulthood because of the complications of the disease. Also cardiovascular complications and several other organs that can be implicated.
So what are some of the ways that you can address the difficulties that come with have drugs that are passed and approved that are for such rare diseases? Because I know that's one like major topic in rare disease circles, especially with my rare disease that I have, because either they're passed and they're only for adults, or they're passed but they're only safe in certain instances, or company like big pharma won't take on the clinical trials because there's not enough to do it. So how do you guys tackle those, like the main burdens that quote unquote burdens that can come with the clinical trials for drugs for such rare diseases?
Yeah, I think there's two kind of themes that push and pull on each other. One is, you know, all of those challenges in the setting have to do with really awareness and giving a reason for someone to act, and kind of actually why we're talking here today, and, you know, what we spent a lot of time on is building that awareness and, you know, driving people to want to take action to help patients dealing with these rare diseases. And so kind of diving into some of those specific challenges on the awareness front is, you know, there aren't that many people with the syndrome or with the disease to start with to enroll in clinical studies. So you're looking for relatively few patients across wide geographies. You're dealing with regulators or other stakeholders that might not know much about the disease because it is rare. So there's a lot of educating of people along the way. And a lot of that is addressed through building awareness, having materials or resources, spokespeople that can kind of talk about all of the factors at play. As a company, what we do to effectively run studies in settings like this and get new products ultimately approved and get them out to patients, which is in the end of the day what we're trying to do every day here, is stay focused on building the relationships with the small circle of researchers and physicians that are experts in these fields, and helping to invest in the awareness. So, you know, using simple things as websites, social media, some of our interactions with the community to talk about the disease and why we need new therapies? What are some of the things we can direct new therapies at?
Mm-hmm. And you, one of the reasons that Alagille syndrome has coming full circle again here on my podcast, because about a year ago, I had released my episode with Anna Laurent, focusing on her case in particular, but you guys reached out because, again, you focus on Alagille syndrome, but also recently, this past Monday, January 24th, was National Alagille Syndrome Day. And also, you guys recently had a drug that was approved. Am I correct? Do you mind like going into the details of how that went and how that's looking forward in the future?
Absolutely. Yeah. Huge milestone for us as a company and for the Alagille syndrome community that at the end of September last year, Liv Marley, our lead product, was approved for treatment of cholestatic pruritus in patients with Alagille syndrome 1 year of age and older. So specifically approved for that pruritus, the itching that is one of the biggest burdens in Alagille syndrome. So excited to have that product available. Over the past few months now, we've been rolling it out. And a lot to talk about there, but it's an exciting moment for Mirum as a company and for the Alagille syndrome community.
Mm-hmm. And how is the company's like goals looking for, like, how is the approach looking forward as you're looking into 2022, 2023 as, we're in a world that is constantly surrounded by news of medicine, obviously, because we're living in a pandemic. Like, how are the company's goals going forward? This sounds like another business call, but how are the company's goals going forward in regards to making sure more of Liv Marley is rolled out, as well as just future endeavors you guys have in like the coming like 6 months, year, however far you want to go with this, with your answer to this question.
Sure. Yeah. And that's kind of how we break it up too. Liv Marley, and how do we get it out to Alagille patients dealing with pruritus, and then all of the other diseases we're working in with Liv Marley, as well as Volixibat, our second program. And on the Liv Marley launch standpoint, where we're looking at how do we get broaden access for patients to Liv Marley. In the US, where we're currently approved, we put a lot of time and thought into creating things that help physicians and families of patients access the product. So we have a patient hub that is a resource center for families and physicians looking to prescribe and to support some of the paperwork that can be involved on the front end as families work to get access to Liv Marley, and education, you know, having people across the country that can meet with physicians, tell them about this new product that's available, and, you know, educate them on Liv Marley and what are the appropriate ways to talk about it with their patients. So within the US, that's all going well. And you know, the initial reaction from families and physicians, frankly, has been, it's a high point in my career to hear some of the feedback that's coming back, just overwhelming stories of some of those first treatment experiences. And beyond the US, we're now focusing on how do we expand our reach and launch Liv Marley in other countries. As a little company, we keep our sights on what we can do and where we need help. We are doing some of this on our own in Europe, in particular in Western Europe, where a lot of us as a team have worked before and actually launched products before. But then beyond that, we have signed up a number of partner companies. So we have multiple partner companies around the globe, and they are within their countries going through similar processes. So they're filing for Liv Marley's approval. They're building awareness. They're kind of carrying the baton and joining in the effort to advance Liv Marley as a new available treatment option for cholestatic pruritus and Alagille syndrome.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. How has that, like, Like, how has that like changed the way you work on a daily basis? Like, how does that like global, I mean, obviously like your global presence and trying to have Live Marley and also potentially other programs, I'm assuming, around the globe, like how does that view like play into what you do and what your company does here, at least here and in the Bay Area at like your headquarters? How does that play into like your everyday work? Like how does that mindset play into everything that you do?
The first step of it is that time zones are less relevant. So yep. Things happen kind of around the clock. And you know, so that calls for a little bit of flexibility and creativity, but with Zoom now, it actually is a little bit more feasible. And there's a lot of kind of cultural adaption and understanding the local regulatory needs, distribution needs. And so we've had to put a lot of investment and hiring into the people that kind of work the machinery behind, you know, making sure the drug is produced, packaged properly, follows all the local requirements, and gets through customs and gets shipped out to all of these different countries. So a whole lot on the quality and supply chain. As you can imagine, the, you know, distribution of a drug like this has a lot of quality requirements and regulation. And so that's what we've been spending some time on, making sure that we're up to global standards to get this product available around the globe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that like it's as equal, I'm assuming, across the board, because obviously like you don't want one dose of Live Marley to be different than the other. You want it to be pretty much the same, I'm assuming, as it is like quality wise. But a lot of, I'm assuming it's a lot of logistics work. But you're reaching so many people around like several countries, fingers crossed that it gets approved. But like, if once it does, like your outreach is going to be incredible, and that can only go, I can only go forward, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And it's just exciting to see the reach extend beyond the US. You know, getting to this approval, we now have this treatment option that's out there for patients, really, you know, in theory forever. And so that's a new landmark in treatment for pruritus and Alagille syndrome that we're all quite proud of. And now to be able to do that outside the U.S. Is super exciting. We just last week, our partner company in China just had their filing officially submitted and working towards a review there. And it's happening in other countries all over the globe. So for me, what's most exciting is to see that our work, and we're a relatively small team, gets amplified by all these other companies that are joining with us.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Kind of turning less from logistics and more to the rare diseases you treat themselves. What fascinates you most about either the rare diseases themselves or the community you're helping as a CEO of a pharmaceutical company?
I'd comment on the patient community that forms around some of these rare diseases. And I mean, it just leaves me in awe. It's hard to put it a different way. Just the amount of energy, hope, and spirit that comes from the families that are dealing with, you know, really difficult decisions and you know, day-to-day battles, and that they show up in their interactions with us, and there's a smile, and there's such energy to learn about what's next on the horizon. And frankly, that's as motivating as anything I've ever encountered in work, is the just the energy that comes from the patient community.
Mm-hmm. So yes, it's definitely like, again, I realize I'm part of that patient community, but it's definitely something that you can't see anywhere else, because you're all kind of just bonding over the fact that you're not basically, this sounds bad, but like you're bonding over the fact that you're not completely healthy and that there is something quote unquote wrong, but we all just kind of embrace it. And then we use that energy to just like advocate for us. I've never seen so much self-advocacy in another community ever. And it's amazing. It obviously gets us places, but there are still so many more milestones that have yet to be reached, even though there have been so many that already have been reached. And social media and Zoom and what I'm doing right now with you obviously amplifies that. But yeah, I can comment on the fact that the rare disease community is incredibly energetic and unlike anything that I've ever seen before.
Yeah. And you're full of passion. I think another kind of interesting aspect to it is that you're working in rare disease and meeting some of the families dealing with the settings that we're working in. No one is the same, right? Everybody's course, especially in particular in these rare diseases, it can be so different from one to the next. And just there's so much left to learn and understanding the drivers of why, you know, one patient's symptoms are so different from the next. And despite all that kind of, you know, different courses and experience, you still see the people coming together with the passion to help figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible. Again, as someone who's part of it, I am with you there. It's quite interesting. And it's, again, like I've said before already, it's unlike anything that's probably ever out there. Yeah, this is going to be another shifting over to kind of just like what you do as a part of your job. Is there anything you in particular want to be part of your like quote unquote legacy as you, the CEO, or of your company? Like, what do you want it to be known for at the end of the day? And how do you wish to accomplish that?
Above all, to get new important products approved and available. You know, once you get that product out and available, that's a milestone that can't be taken back. And in particular, if you make it so relevant that it gets ingrained in kind of day-to-day care for one of these terrible diseases, that's what has drawn me into working in the industry. So, you know, logging more of those is what I want to keep doing. So, you know, Liv Marley, as an example, is just such a lifelong accomplishment for so many people that have worked on it. So I absolutely cannot take credit for myself for the approval, because so many people have to come together and work on these programs to get them to the finish line. But to be part of more of those is really why we're in the business. And, you know, a lot of it comes back to, you know, as so many things, you know, your own personal experiences and, you know, having a family member or cousin who had dealt with a rare disease and seeing, you know, having that be part of kind of my high school years, where their family was coming from a rural town to stay with us and watching them go through all these really difficult decisions. And as I started, I kind of found my way into pharmaceuticals years after the time that I'm thinking about here. And I remember talking with my uncle about this, and he heard I was going into drug development. And at that time, it was just kind of like, hey, this is going to be a cool place to build a career and have an impact. And I, you know, it hadn't really all crystallized into, you know, this goal of get new products approved. When my uncle said, you know, go find something for Jesse, right? And that kind of brought it all home and is a real crystallizing driver in what I think about for legacy is getting products approved is something just can't be taken away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely like with what you and I both do, again, granted it's drastically different, that personal side, I feel like is the stem of that energy that you're talking about with the rare disease community, again, both with the patients and what you guys do, because it is incredible. I cannot imagine like the amount of work that has gone into Liv Marley. I'm trying to process it and I do not know how you guys did it. And I'm just fascinated by the fact that not only has this been approved, but it's helping people, so many people, and going to help so many people, and having that personal, it's not necessary, but the fact that that's there, it kind of adds that what kind of extra motivator that helps the hard days. I feel like I'm assuming you can probably say the same thing. It helps with those hard days, and it makes the milestones like getting Liv Marley approved probably even better.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of our work, there's times when you're buried and reviewing, hundreds of pages of documents, and all of a sudden things feel like a job, right? You're deep in kind of some really grinding work, and bringing it back to that personal experience and why you're here, and thinking about some of the families that we've met along the way, that helps bring the fire back into the day and push to the finish line.
Mm-hmm. And kind of, this is, I ask every single one of my guests this as my final question, and this is connected to what we just talked about. But why do you want to share your story on my podcast?
Because awareness is all what we need to do every day to help advance care for some of these terrible diseases. And by kind of talking about a little bit about how Mirum came together and a little bit of the Liv Marley story and my own story, and maybe that sparks some ideas for other people looking at new ways to approach rare diseases and build awareness about our programs in particular. Selfishly, we're hiring. We need to, have people be interested in the company and get excited about some of the things we can accomplish. But that all comes back to this effort to build awareness and get attention on rare disease.
Mm-hmm. And are there any final remarks you want to say before we wrap up the episode?
Oh, just to say thanks for hosting me, and to folks tuning in and listening. Thanks for a little bit of attention on Liv Marley and Alagille syndrome. We're excited about the promise of doing the same in multiple other rare diseases, and stay tuned for more.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and you guys are all welcome anytime. Just, where to find me. but yes, thank you so much, Chris, for joining the podcast. Thank you to all the listeners for joining in, and be sure to subscribe to Ars for Rare wherever you find your podcasts, and follow me on Instagram. To everybody listening out there, follow me on Instagram at Ars for Rare Podcast, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thanks, Annie.